Hey there, welcome to this week's episode of the Inside Running Podcast. We hope you are doing well. This week's sponsor, the Inside Running Podcast, is proudly Koro's Wearables. They make GPS watches and maybe the newest GPS watch brand on the market, but they've already partnered with some of the best road, trail, and mountain athletes in the world. I think I saw the other day, Brett Robinson, Lisa Waitman, Sam McEntee, Luke Matthews. I think even Stewie's repping one of these watches at the moment, so they must be pretty good. Do yourself a favor and check out the brand that Runner's World named the Gear of the Year in 2019. Welcome to episode 126 of the Inside Running Podcast. Thank you for joining us for another week. We're back with another show, plenty to talk about in these strange times in the world. Welcome to my co-host, King of Canberra, Bradley Croker. How are you going?
Yeah, good, mate. I feel like I'm in a corona-induced training camp, just not doing a lot of teaching, home a lot. Viv's working from home. Getting plenty of running done, but it's a weird vibe around town. Like, you go down to the shops and everyone sort of looks at you like you got leprosy or the plague or something. Everyone gives you a wide berth. So
That's your haircut.
Yeah, maybe. It's a weird vibe.
You only race once a year anyway, so it probably feels normal for you to spend in that training camp mode.
Yeah, I don't socialise a lot. So, having social gatherings of two people, it's the norm.
Yeah, two people's back. And Julian Spence down in Ballarat, how you going?
I'm good. Getting through it. What are we, 1 week in? 2 weeks, 3 weeks. How long has this been going on for?
Corona, COVID-19. Mm. Yeah, I don't know. It's been going on for a while. It just gets heavier every week, doesn't it?
It escalates. You know, now it seems a bit more predictable what's going to happen. So that's a nice feeling to know. In terms of like regulations and stuff, we can sort of see it all coming ahead of time. Everyone sort of predicted what'll happen so far. So at least you can start to plan a little bit for that.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't predict the way that the US and Europe and stuff's going, though. We don't want to head down that predictable path.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know that's not good to predict, but at least there's some sense of having other countries gone through it before, so you can look ahead and go, you know what, this is what's happened, and these are the restrictions placed on them, and so you can expect to see some of that.
Hey. And the reports today were that there was the spike in cases has actually dropped over the last couple of days, so hopefully that continues as well.
How are you coping with it, Moose, down there, business owner kind of thing? You kind of see the full of it compared to Brad and I?
Yeah, it's been interesting to watch watch what's happened in terms of business, just in general, watching other businesses behave. And I've seen a few businesses sort of sit on their hands, do nothing, and just fold away. And then I've seen some other businesses really like adapt, sort of think on their feet, get creative, get innovative, and look for ways to try to get through it. So maybe think outside the box a little bit or expand in certain ways that makes them relevant during this time. So it's been for us, it's been a time where we have to look at, okay, we can't offer our bread and butter. Our bread and butter in the store is face-to-face sort of expert knowledge, seeing a foot, seeing a runner, recommending shoes based on feedback we're hearing from the runner and what we're seeing. That's our bread and butter. It always will be, but this at the moment, like, our business now is relying on sort of non-physical fittings, obviously. So we're doing a lot of talking on the phone with people, a lot of email, social media, chatting with customers. That's been great. So, you know, we went online, I don't know when I got it up. I think I got it up Wednesday maybe, or a week.
Yeah, no, it was Tuesday night when we're recording. You had to go finish building the site.
Yeah, it was a bit of a rush. And to be honest, it's a bit scrappy, but that's what it is, you know. We're not a fucking massive online corporation. We are still a local running store that just has an online portion. And what we're really loving at the moment is when people go on the website, we've got this little kind of blurb that says, if you've got any questions about your shoes, contact us. And we're just hoarding all these questions from around the country about people and their shoes, and it's great. So, I mean, it's not like it's a different sort of work day at the moment, but it's we're being overwhelmed with the support from the running community, like looking to support a local store. I didn't think it was out there, but it's been like really touching actually to see so many people reach out and support us. It's been phenomenal. Like we've felt overwhelmed.
Yeah, one of the guys I coach sent me a message saying I might buy a couple of shoes off Moose, and I'm like, yeah, go for it. Lachlan Ward, has he bought some off you?
Perhaps. Processing all the orders every day, but no, perhaps.
Just checking up, just checking he wasn't start telling me fibs. Anyway,
yeah.
Start talking.
Running with a guy on Sunday, actually, Moose, that said he'd given you a call, Stokesy from Canberra.
He told me to get into you, actually. He told me to rip in. We had a good chat the other day, mainly about giving you shit. Is he a short bloke?
Yeah, he is, yeah. But goes all right. He's like 54, still cranks along, though.
Really? Damn.
Yeah.
Apparently you just bury him every fucking Sunday within 10 minutes.
I've only run with him twice.
Yeah, well, it's happened twice now, apparently.
Tell us about your running week, Julian.
Oh, my running week. I'm just so enthralled in this conversation, I forgot to get it up.
Do you want Bradley to go first?
If you give me a minute or less. No, here I am. I'm on. So Monday was my shortest day of the week. I only ran 8.5K. That was in the morning. Monday was a big day. I mean, oh, yeah, because we were on the podcast, weren't we? Or was that Tuesday?
Moved it to Tuesday.
Yeah, so I was flat knack on Monday. Monday was one of the biggest work days of my life. Tuesday, also a very big work day. I've been putting these videos up on the Running Company page. Surely that's something you boys have been checking out.
Yeah, I've been watching them.
Found some good ones, Moose.
Yeah, what's your favourite so far?
I don't know. You've managed to pick a wide, I think, yeah, you've managed to pick a wide variety that would appeal to a lot of different people. The Mottram 5K was pretty epic.
Today's one, yeah, definitely.
Andrew Lloyd as well. Like, I've seen that video that many times, and every time you start it, you're just like, nah, this must be a different video. He can't catch him from here. Like, it just, every time I watch it, I'm like, nah, how does he come back from this?
What did you think about it? Oh, sorry, go on.
Oh, but then you look at also like the Chicago one with Sammy Wenjuru. Like that's phenomenal as well. Like, yeah, so you've done well, Moose. You've nailed that.
What about the first one, the Humboldt cross country from, what was it, 68?
Oh, yeah, it wasn't my favorite.
I didn't get the whole way through it.
That video, have you ever seen Morning of the Earth, the surf movie?
Nah.
No, it reminds me. It's like the running version of that. A bit of soulful stuff, you know?
I actually found a really good one for you today. I was doing some research on some stuff. I won't give it away. I'll send it to you after this. But a local, it's got some good local threads for Ballarat, yeah.
Okay, Ballarat. Yeah, I was going to say, this isn't someone filming you out at fucking the industrial estate.
Nah, hopefully. This time next week, I might try to get one of those for you, though. Anyway, Tuesday, you had a bit of spark about you.
Yeah, I was like, a bit of spark back. I thought, fuck it, you got to get fit, boy. You can't come out of this. Because I'd run once the day before 8K. I thought, that's not enough. That's not good enough. So a bit of a rev up got me going. Went out 17K did the moose, this thing called the moose loop, 330 meters over 70K. It's through a lot of trail too. Just started rolling home pretty quick, ran it in heavies. Felt like I really needed to sort of punish myself a little bit. And yeah, that was a tough run, but I got it done. That afternoon, ran with my mate Freeman. He's got two cafes in town. So, like, he's one of the blokes that I've mentioned, thinking on their feet, creating things, changing, adapting. And it was really good to run with someone else who's sort of going through the same thing. And yeah, we bonded over that, had some good chat about it. It was sort of pumped me up a bit that day. Tuesday was a good day. Wednesday, in the morning, I went out for a run, 17K. I can't remember where it was, ran 17K somewhere. When in the afternoon, I ran into the accountant, which was nice. They just talked me through the small business stuff. I have no idea what's going on with that still. I'm waiting for him to tell me all about it. Went on a new loop, which starting to get a bit bored of my old loops at the moment. Don't know about you blokes, but I'm starting to look for new spots to run. This was one of them. It was a real shit loop, to be honest. Next day, went out with Watto on these trails out in Creswick, single track, like proper single track, and 3K in, running with Watto. I saw it slow motion. He was running in front of me, this little tree root out of the ground. Saw him catch it on his left foot. Right foot did not get out in time, so he's basically arms pinned by himself, just does like the full slug dance move down through the dirt down the hill. Oh god, it was good. But he was actually in a fair bit of shock, so you know, he got up, he was like full frazzled from it. Felt nauseous, kind of felt real sick. I had to sit him down, hold his hand for a little bit, and then it started to go away. And he had to walk for a little section and then started jogging. In the end, he was fine. But, oh, my goodness. You know when someone goes down on a trail, it just happens and it's like there's so much adrenaline going on.
Did you laugh initially and then realize it was maybe a bit more serious and then go, oh, are you okay, mate?
I didn't laugh because I know what it's like hitting the deck. It was fuck. Because he went down hard. And in the end, he didn't have anything wrong with him, I don't think, but he was a bit scratched up. And yeah, I didn't laugh because I could see he was pretty frazzled from it. Then we ended up doing like this would be up there with one of the hardest runs, 20K, single track, like real weird trails, and average 4:21. So that was fucking flying. That was one of the, I know it doesn't look like it, but that there is as good as any session I've done recently. In the afternoon, got out for a jog. Yeah, 8K. Next day, two short runs. Oh, Paul Turgut versus Gebrselassie, Sydney 10K. I get these videos up in the morning and I watch them and then I go running. So obviously this one here, I got out 5K out. Then I did 10 by 20 seconds on for 40 seconds back on the way back to the house. Average 3:49s. Did a gym workout in the afternoon. I was kind of flat out at work, had a few beers at work. Then I went for a run. It's actually kind of good. I can get away with that. I was thinking about that tonight.
How many beers?
I remember. It wasn't like more than five or anything. But
still, beers and go for a run.
I said it wasn't more than four. I don't know how many it was, but I can. I don't know why. Something about it. I can run with that shit in my guts. Next day, did a workout. So this was a weird one because I told Freeman, I'm like, I want to go for this session. And then saw another bloke during the day and messaged me. He said, oh, I want to come. So then that was three people. And at this point in time, I'm like, is three too many to run with? I'm not sure. I think it could be too many. But I don't want to tell someone no at that time. So anyway, you rocked up and it was fucking awkward running along knowing that there was three of you not tight, but like running around like a path together. And at that time, I'm like, no, this is the last time. We're going solo from now on. In the end, later that night, they kind of announced that you had to go solo. But I did a session. I did 8x90 second hard, 90 second like jog. and averaged probably averaged like 250s, I reckon, for the 90 seconds. I wore the Nike. Have we talked about the Alpha Flies yet?
No.
Let's tell the audience about this.
No. Chris Cook, one of the let me just pull up his actual fucking name or his title. I don't even know his title, but he works in the Nike Innovation Lab in Beaverton. And when I was over there in December, I was chatting to a couple of guys in the footwear department. One of them was he basically, I think he's the brand manager for like national, like internet, I don't know what he is, but he said you might be able to get your hands on some of these when we do the trials thing. So they, back in early December, they sort of told me about the trials. Every runner gets a pair set up that they rolled out just before the trials. Everyone's kind of like, whoa, you guys are giving everyone a pair. That was crazy. Imagine doing that as a brand, just going, everyone can have one. That's still one of like the biggest baller moves from a brand ever, I reckon.
Good flex.
Yeah. And so there was going to be some left over, and this Chris, he sort of reached out. We're trying to get him on as a guest on the podcast. It's got to go through a few Nike channels first. So you'll learn more about Chris, but he was one of the founders of the Bauman Track Club over there. And he works in close proximity to the Alpha Fly. I'm not sure his exact title or role with it, but he sent us over some. So he sent over you boys one, and I got a pair of the black and greens as well. And he sent me a pair of leftover from the wear test kit, the black and white ones that you saw rolling around Kenya, just probably around the December, January time frame. So I put them on for this session, and I'm like, whoa, these things bounce. Like, if you have, I'm going to do a proper review on them, so I won't ruin it too much. But basically, like, there's a big, like, Nike Air Zoom unit right under there. Air unit under the ball of the foot, and it sort of compresses when you put weight on it. It's quite thick and cumbersome, and it feels a little odd when you're just standing there, because you've got a lot going under the ball of your foot and just foam under the rear of your foot. So when I was running, I really felt like I had to be more midfoot when I was landing, sort of right up over the ball. If I wasn't, then the shoe didn't feel like it was efficient as it could be. It's sort of the forgiveness factor. Some shoes are really forgiving when you're running them. You can land in multiple different ways and the shoe still feels good, whereas other shoes, they're very unforgiving. And if you don't land exactly where the shoe wants you to land, it feels a bit rough. I felt that with the Alpha Fly. But when you're in the sweet spot with that shoe, whew, it feels really nice. I think the reps I did were a bit quick for the shoe for me, like running sort of 5K pace is a bit fast, I reckon, for what this shoe could potentially be best for, which might be slowed down to sort of half marathon to marathon pace. But it's so exciting to have something innovative on your foot. Like, this doesn't look like a shoe anymore. Like, people, what they've done is they've gone, what we used to think about shoes is here. Why are we still doing it like that? Let's make something that doesn't really resemble something that you're used to thinking about, like a shoe. Let's make something different. And to have that on your foot, it's a crazy experience.
What about when you pull it out of the box? Like I've seen a million photos of this shoe before, but it wasn't until you have it in your hands do you realize just how innovative and different and crazy it actually is as a shoe. And you put it on too, didn't you, Brad? I just put mine on the top of the wardrobe and just changed my home and contents insurance up about $1,000. Mine's just gone straight to the wardrobe. You put yours on?
Yeah, I haven't run in them, but I did put them on. And the first thing that I noticed was how hard it was actually to get my foot into the bootie. It seemed really tight, but then once I was in, it was awesome. The other thing I noticed was the amount that's underneath your forefoot almost made the shoe seem more stable when I was standing there. Because like with the old 4% and the Next Percent, when I first would put them on and stand on there, I felt like I was sort of standing on marshmallows, whereas I didn't feel that so much with this shoe. But as I said, I haven't run a step in them. But nice work, Moose. I tell you what, putting up with 2.5 years of your shit's finally paid dividends.
When he told us that was coming.
I'm real worried that you're just going to fucking put these on eBay because you're a tight ass.
And they're going for $2,000 on eBay now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought it was $1,000. $2,000.
No, don't out. Me either. Thank you.
I won't.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
When we get him on, it'll be one of the all-time interviews, I reckon. You'll hear from a bloke who's got more creative bones in his body than I don't know who. Me. You. All of us put together.
Moose, will you continue to wear it in training?
If I need the motivation to go for a run, possibly. Thinking about doing a marathon workout in it, because that's what it's sort of for, and I want to maybe get the best out of it before I do my proper shoe review on it. Like I want to do a shoe review that compares it to the Vaporfly Next Percent. So they're going to keep
You can pick the guy that owns the running shop. Yeah, I'll keep using them because I can get more in a few months when they come out.
No, I don't like that.
I had a YouTuber reach out to me today asking if I could do a review in them and send him the video.
Oh, yeah. Well,
is he going to pay you?
I don't know. Didn't ask that. It's just a kid, Brad. Just trying to help out a young creative in the running space.
Yeah, I was supposed to do that, but I didn't get a chance to. But I want to do a proper one where you can actually like be educational for someone who's in the market for it. Because the Next Percent is still a relevant shoe in my mind. Like the workout that I did on Saturday, I think would have probably felt better in an X percent than an Alpha Fly. But I reckon when I do those sort of long tempos, the Alpha Fly will be the king of that domain. So I reckon you probably, like if you're serious, you'll be in the market for both pairs.
Oh, yeah.
For me.
good marketing. What did you do on Sunday? What did that title mean first? GTFOH.
Get the fuck out of here.
Okay. Did you know that, Bradley?
Yeah, I figured it out.
You want me to tell you all these little acronyms because I feel old and then you don't know it and I'm like, oh, I'm actually a cool guy.
No, you live in a town with more than 20,000 people though. We're a bit slow up here.
I'm the king of acronyms now. Yeah. You know what LOL means?
Yeah, I think that means laugh out loud, doesn't it? That one?
I thought it was lots of laughs.
Hey, Moose, what does 15 Shit, minutes too many mean?
Oh, yeah. Let's keep this moving.
Yeah. So the afternoon went for a run and I just didn't eat enough during the day, like just forgot to eat properly. And then you get halfway through your second run and all I could think about was hitting a beer. I'm like, how am I going to get home as quick as possible right now? And yeah, just bonked. And it felt the same the next day. Did a long run, 30K by myself, had a tailwind for the first like 8K. And then somehow copped a headwind for the next 22. I don't know how that happened, but I got so cooked that I forgot that I had gels with me. And I was going up this hill at about the 25K mark thinking, fuck, I need something to eat or drink so bad. I got two gels sitting in my back pocket. I didn't even remember. So that helped me, got one back. And then, I don't know, I just haven't done a long run for enough, maybe like 3 weeks or so. And that was rough. 30K though, solo now, listening to a few podcasts, a bit of music. 158K, geez, 158K, there's multiple ways to get to 158K. Back when, so did 183 like 3 weeks ago, that shit was easy. 158K, hardest 100 mile week of my life.
Yeah, a bit happened though.
Yeah, I know, it's big, probably the biggest week of my life.
Bit of stress coming from other directions other than running.
Roller coaster.
Bradley, you're still up on up top on the roller coaster?
Yeah, I'm going okay. So we drove back from the coast on the Monday. So I actually listened to the friend of the show interview that you did with Christian on the way back. And then that afternoon got out for an hour at 4:04 around Mulligan's and listened to the Road to Nowhere episode. So always a few laughs in that one. So that was Monday. Tuesday morning, got out for 35 minutes at 4:10, and it was, I've written here, sensational morning for a trot. It was one of those days where crisp in the morning, no wind, just awesome. That afternoon, my session was, so I did 3 90-second hills, 3 60-second hills, and 3 30-second hills. And the recoveries were about 30 seconds longer than the length of the rep. So 2 minutes on the 90 seconds, 90 seconds on the 60-second hills, and 1 minute on the 30-second hills. At the end of the 30-second hill, I jogged down for 2 minutes and then did a 10-minute tempo on the flat section of Mulligans at about 3:12s. So that was a pretty solid session. It was like 9.3K, so 3:32s all up. Then Wednesday, got out in the afternoon. Oh, yeah, that's where I worked Wednesday. Had 18 students at the whole school. A school of 900, there was 18. So that was a pretty cruisy day of work. The Alpha Flies arrived that day, so I was pretty pumped. And, yeah, got out for 90 minutes and just felt amazing. Averaged 401s for 90 minutes, so 22.4K, 250-odd metres of climbing. Thursday, 60 minutes at 4:08. Was a bit tired to start with, but then I find after 20, 30 minutes, I sort of just come good. I think it's just age, just starting to like, takes me a while to loosen off. Then Friday, I just ran once on the Thursday, just ran once on the Friday. My session was a 10K undulating tempo out at the, so you go through Mulligan's Flat out to this other nature reserve called Guru Yaru. And it's always the hardest run, hardest session that I do out there. It's like, it never looks like anything good on paper. I averaged 3:25s for 10K, but it was hard work. Just the hills are, the hills just really zap you, and it's hard to get a rhythm, but I do find I get pretty strong off it. So that was Friday.
You could do a nick earlier, Brad, and just read through all your Strava comments and slow yourself down a bit. I feel like you're going pretty quick through this week.
I got 8 on that one. We can go.
Bat chat. That's all.
So Andy. All right, we'll go back. So then Saturday, just 2 runs. I need to go quick because Moose fucking talks for ages about a pretty standard exactly. training week. So
especially when we've got a guest we're bringing in as well at a certain time this week.
You realise this is my podcast. You boys are just on it.
Sounds like a song lyric. So Saturday morning, 45 minutes at 4:14s. And then Saturday afternoon, 35 minutes at 4:05. But Mulligan's Flat was packed. Like normally when I go out for a run, I will see between zero and five people on a run. And I would have seen 30 plus, yeah, I reckon.
Run and boom.
I guess everyone who would normally go to the gym needs to find somewhere else to get out. And I heard a few people say that they're exploring different parts of Canberra, so people had never been to Mulligan's before. So that was Saturday. And then Sunday, so Josh Johnson, who I ran with the previous week, previous Sunday, he messaged me Saturday asking if I was doing a long run. I said, yeah, I'll go out to Mulligan's. So he met me. And same thing. Like, we saw, probably 50-odd people. Actually saw Britt McGowan, the 800-meter runner. And we were going in opposite directions. She goes, where the fuck are all these people come from? Like, it's bizarre just seeing, when you're meant to be socially distancing, you'd think that out at Mulligan's Flat, you'd be very socially distanced, but it wasn't the case. Did a pretty solid long run, 2 hours at 3:53s, just under 400 metres of elevation, for a 149.7K week. So one of my biggest weeks in ages. And I think there was actually, I did actually run 161K in a 7-day period over the last 2 weeks, but it doesn't obviously show up because the weeks are Monday to Sunday.
Clutching there.
What? Clutching what?
Clutching for the 100-mile week.
Well, no, if you add up all my kilometres from the Thursday of the previous week through to the Wednesday, it's 161K.
No one does that.
How do you feel at the end of that 30K, Brad, 3:53? Like, you feel fine?
Not too bad. Well, I did that. I didn't have any breakfast and I didn't have any gels.
Have a coffee?
I had a coffee, yeah. I had a coffee in the morning before the run. So that's it.
Just black, though, no milk?
No, I had a little bit of a dash of milk, yeah.
Carb loading, if you ask me.
Carb loading, yeah.
Not fasted.
if any if anything, I find the first part, like Josh, you know, 4:22 we ran for the first K, and I was just like I just wasn't warmed up. But then I get to sort of 8 or 9 K and we're rolling 3:50s. That feels easier than what the first K at 4:22s did. So look, I think the only time I've run that quick for a long run was the week before I hurt my calf in Melbourne. I ran with Tommy DeCanto around Mulligan's. We did 30K at a similar pace. I certainly won't be doing that pace every single Sunday, but it does give me confidence that I can get through that sort of pace, that distance with no nutrition, over some hills, and not be completely spent at the end. So, yeah, it's all good.
Up and about, Moose, up and about.
Yeah, still going. How long has he got?
It's been up for a while now. I'm liking it. I'll quickly go through my week. I did 5.5K Monday morning. Got called into work. School was calling me all last week and I wasn't going to go. And then it was looking like school was going to get shut down. And I'm like, yeah, I better go. Just do one day, get some money to get me through the next week of grocery shopping. 4:28, that was why it was only 5.5K, 7K in the afternoon after school at 4:25. So pretty much a full recovery day there. On Tuesday, I did 8K in the morning. Hudson was 6 months actually on Tuesday and had to go get his all his needles and stuff. Brad, you'd remember those days when you get the immunisations for 6 months for the baby?
Yeah, Lily's just had her 18-month ones.
Oh, do you get them again at 18 months?
Yeah.
Do you have to get them at 12 months or you just keep going through?
No, you go 2, 4, 6, 12, 18, and then 4 years, I think.
Shit, there's a few to still to come by the sound of things. Anyway, so just did 8K in the morning, nice autumn feels, kind of cooler, hitting trails. And then in the afternoon I did 16K with strides. And it was actually interesting listening to Ali Pashley talk on the Road to Nowhere, how she does her strides in the last couple of Ks of her run, so she doesn't have to stop and kind of do them, as a separate kind of run, and you keep the Strava kind of Ks going. And I'd do the same thing. So it was kind of good listening to that. So if you look at my run, the last K's in about 3:20 or something like that, because I spend most of it doing strides. Wednesday, I did a workout, met up with Archie Reed and Nathan Stope. We did something different. Moose, never done a workout like this one before. It was 5K and then 3 minutes recovery, and then 5 by 2 minutes, pretty hard, with 1 minute jog between, 3 minutes recovery, and then another 5K-er. Got the boys together at the start, and we kind of come up with positions where we were going to run on the track. I was front left, Archie was front right, Nathan was back middle, and we did this on our park run course kind of thing, and did the first 5K in 15:50, and then we had 3 minutes kind of recovery, which was plenty of time. Did the 2 minute reps around like this block, which was probably measuring short on the GPS. Most of them come out at like 2:52 kind of K pace, a minute jog there off the back of those, and then another 3 minutes kind of walking around before we did the last 5K. And we got like probably 1500, 2K into the last 5K, and I just felt awesome and kind of just found myself moving away from the guys, and I just stopped looking at my watch. Like, there was no point looking at my watch because I didn't need to put the brakes on because I didn't have a race coming up. I didn't need to kind of hit a specific time because it wasn't a workout where I was trying to hit a specific time, and I just kind of...
And you dropped them, so you didn't need to look at the watch anymore. You're like, yeah. Oh, well, I've dropped them.
And I was like,
done. Confidence.
And I'm like...
Race one. I've got to
social distance myself as much as possible from these guys in the next couple, okay? But it was weird because it's only probably happened 2 or 3 times since I've ran in the last like 15 years, but I got into this real flow state and I felt so light because there was nothing to think about or nothing to worry about. And because we were doing our park run course, I knew where the 5K would end, so I didn't need to be looking at my watch to see where the GPS data was at. And it was weird. It was kind of like a dream. It was a really strange feeling, just being super relaxed and just concentrating on form, and it just kind of flowed really quick. And then when we got back to the finish, those boys were kind of like, whoa, you kind of moved away from us. And I was like, I don't know what happened just then. It was kind of, coming out of a dream, a real surreal kind of feeling and something I haven't experienced a lot in running. So closed that last 5K in 15:37. Then did 30 minutes easy in the afternoon at 4:30K pace. Thursday, I listened to The Road to Nowhere with Ali, Joel, and Nick. and you hosted that one, Brad. Plenty of laughs in there. It's You told me the episode.
They talk some shit, I tell you. Like, we always plan to have these listener questions in there. We never get to them. And Joel wasn't even running for the week.
Yeah, will you send it to me when it's finished? And you're like, because I message you, like, hurry up and send it to me. I want to go to bed. Like, why are you guys still going? And then the episode went for like an hour 20. And I listened to Joel's recap, which was like, and I looked down at my watch, and he'd finished his weekly recap. He ran once, and it still took him 14 minutes. But then in my head, I'm like, how the hell does this episode still go for another hour and 6 minutes with two people just to recap their weeks? It's, it was entertaining anyway. Got my whole 14K run there, easy. And then in the afternoon, you actually rang me when I was just putting my shoes on to go for a run. So I got pretty much a live update, Moose, about how Brad's running's going and how he's covering the ground well and how he's never been this fit before. I'm like, this is not the agenda. What we're meant to be talking about,
mate,
here,
Brad. Don't need to answer the next one.
Never said I've never been this fit before.
Yeah, it's going all right. I was like, isn't this a content meeting where we're talking about what interviews are coming up? But anyway.
It's a stitch up. You wait.
And I couldn't even breathe. Like, I was battling. I was only running at 426K pace, but I couldn't get words out. Anyway, didn't give me a chance to get a word in anyway. Friday, did another workout. 15 minutes on, 15 minutes float. Is this the correct thing here, Moose? Could you just add, 1 minute on, 1 minute float times 15. So 30-minute workout. Yeah. You just add 60-60, and I wasn't sure if you wanted a float or a jog.
Would have jogged that shit.
Yeah, well, that's what I said beforehand. I thought, I reckon I'll just jog this. Like, just punch the 1 minute hard and jog it, and then just make sure you can get 15 kind of good 1 minuters out. And I looked back afterwards, and there was a bit of floating going on there, which is always a good sign when you're floating, when you're trying to jog. Ended up covering 9.25K in the 30 minutes, 3:15 average. Feeling good. Love this workout. I think I've done it for 12 times before, but not 15, so this is my workout for the week. I'm challenging you two boys for next week. See how far you can cover in 30 minutes, fellas. Listeners, same thing. Send me a screenshot. We'll put it on our Instagram. 15 times 1 minute on, 1 minute float. Actually, make it 1 minute jog. You can't float too hard.
Do we subtract about 15% of your distance because it's done at Moama?
I'll give away a Patreon subscription to the best one I see come into the social media channels. How's that sound?
You know, you're just going to have like 300 blokes run 30 minutes as hard as they fucking can.
No, I've got to be out there. Okay, so these are the rules. You got to be able to show me your different laps on rather Garmin Connect or Strava when I click on it from a desktop computer. And the rule for you two boys is you're not allowed to float quicker than 3:45 a K pace.
Makes
sense.
Right.
See how far you can get in 30 minutes. You got nothing else to train for. See if you can beat me in
this
workout.
You didn't float faster than 3:45.
Yeah, your first float was 3:39, Brady.
Shit. I'm just looking that up now.
Most of your floats are sub 3:40, but you boys aren't allowed to run. You boys aren't allowed to do that.
No, I'll work out an average, 3:39, 3:59, 45, 55. There's not many. The average would be 45. Yeah.
You got a 3:34 in there.
The last one was 3:50. I reckon the average is 3:45, Bradley. I'll make it 3:40. Can't float quicker than 3:40. See how you go. Put in your program. Challenge accepted.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Jeez. Brad's going to be quiet though, Miz.
Yeah, I'll see.
I don't.
What else
are you going to do this week?
Since when were you my coach? I've got my sessions planned.
I'm not your coach.
How can I bang out bloody hard long run if I'm doing this?
Exactly, yeah.
Do this in the middle of your long run.
Yeah, maybe I will.
Do it in the alpha flies and then review them next week as well. Actually, I should have put that condition on it. No alpha flies allowed because I did it in next percent.
You know what I'll do it in? New Balance Fuel Cell TC.
You're doing
that
in the car.
That is a banging shoe.
You'll be in the car. That's the only way you'll cover more than 9.25Ks, I reckon.
Oh, I'll put a Styx beer 20-pack on it.
Yeah, have yours arrived yet? Mine haven't.
Yeah, the one I haven't opened yet.
What was that, Friday? Felt good. Anyway, 30 minutes in the afternoon on Friday, 4:31, 16K easy. Just one run on Saturday, 4:34 is like true recovery. Oh, you'll love this story. I didn't listen to that hottest 100 of all time. No, of the decade, the last 10 years. when it was on a couple of weeks ago on Triple J on the radio. So I downloaded like the Spotify playlist of the hottest 100 of the decade, and I've just slowly been like chipping my way through listening to it, thinking I'm listening to it in order. And when I'm listening to it, I'm thinking, nah, this song should be way higher than like this. And it turns out I got home and checked on the internet. This is after listening to it like all week. I'm down to like what I thought was the top 10. It's all in the wrong order. Absolutely stitched up whoever made that Spotify playlist. But anyway.
You didn't have it on shuffle.
No, I made sure I didn't have it on shuffle. Yeah, that was one thing. Anyway, Sunday, went out to Barmer Forest talking about running in new locations and stuff. This is about 20 minutes out of Echuca. Glenn and Archie and I met at the Moama Caltex. We took separate cars out there because we didn't want to be too close together. And we ran along the Murray River, it is out there in the Barmer Forest, for like 12K, did a U-turn, come around, dropped Glenn off, and then Archie and I did a few more Ks. And it was beautiful, just a flat path. We averaged 4 minute K pace. Archie, the alpha, he started rolling along about 3K in. I think we were running sub fours and pretty much just held it. Just going to new locations and trying to explore some new spots. And there's this massive lake out at Barmer. If you look on the map on Strava, we nearly got there. But, yeah, we kind of need to do a few more Ks next time to see if we can see the big lake out there. But beautiful. Probably didn't run on concrete for more than 500 metres. And, yeah, good to mix up scenery and stuff like that. Just had the formation going again, the social distancing, which is pretty hard when you're, you know, when you ask who you're running with a question, but they can't hear you, and then you're wondering why they haven't replied, and then you're like, oh yeah, I've really got to turn around and yell this to this person. So, yeah, that's good, but one of those boys is going to get culled from here on in, because we're down to two.
Good elevation out there, Brady.
Didn't go up one hill the whole time, Brad. What's it say? 260? 290?
296.
Nah, that's false.
I probably don't believe your sessions then either.
It doesn't matter about elevation in 30 minutes. That's the Strava. There's something wrong with Strava. My Garmin Connect actually is accurate, whereas when it uploads to Strava, it's not true. Anyway, so
what are you thinking then? How you finding it easy to get out to run?
Yeah,
Brady?
I'm back. I'm loving it. When you message me during the week, like as long as I can get a bit of direction and have someone planning me workouts and stuff, I'm really good. I think there's something really like primitive about running at the moment and just being a runner for the sake of being a runner and going to these new spots. And I've been seeing like people doing some real strange stuff on Strava, which I can relate to. I reckon it's just a time where people are just going to run for the sake of running and everything else is disappearing. So, and because I'm like, I'm literally the fittest I've ever been. Like Rotterdam's meant to be this weekend. If anything, we kind of stopped the marathon prep 3 weeks out, and I've just kind of been working on like 30-minute speed sessions the last couple of weeks. So if anything, it's kind of probably brought my speed up with that big marathon block. So every time I get into workouts, they're kind of like pretty easy, and I'm feeling pretty good through the middle and through the end. And so workouts are fun, and then jogging's fun because I'm going into new locations. So, yeah, I'm all right motivation-wise. You? Oh, you got the work stuff on. See, I'm doing nothing. I'm just doing like a million Patreon episodes a week.
Yeah, I go through ups and downs with it. Big ups and downs. Like depending on sort of where the head's at around the work stuff, basically. Because it's just really strange at the moment, and it's just not as unpredictable. And I'm the kind of person that throws everything into one thing, and at the moment it's work. So that's why If you go 100% at running, I know something falls down elsewhere, whether it's relationships, work, whatever, you know, it's all for the running. And then you take that focus and you put it all into work, and you've got running that'll fall down.
Yeah.
And so that's pretty obvious. I mean, I like to go all in. That's just my thing.
Yeah, but, and my work's been taken away, I've got, like, that's the highlight of my day at the moment, like, going for my run, and when I'm doing the kind of additional podcast episodes, that's, like, the highlight that I get to talk to someone about running and doing this show. Like, I probably haven't looked forward to doing the weekly show as much as I have the last 2 weeks in forever. Like, it's gone from being a bit of a, oh, shit, we've got to do that, it's Monday night, to, like, oh, yes, I get to talk to Brad and Moose about running this week. Like, it's... And in a way, like, I know this stuff's caused massive issues for so many people around the world and health, but it's been been an interesting learning curve to strip everything back and just see what's important in your life, and like make everything pretty simple. And yeah, like I think that's different for different people, but yeah, kind of doing stuff like, shit, our gardens have never looked so good before, and I've spent so much time at home and kind of fell back in love with running. And I know that's not easy for everyone to say, because different people have different financial situations and how it's affecting them, but probably for someone like myself who is pretty introverted as well, it's kind of not that hard to be at home as it is and just to living a really simple, mundane kind of life.
Yeah, well, it sort of taught me, again, running changes, it's how it means to me as a person. So like in the morning I might run and love every step and think about the fitness benefits it's giving me, and to a degree that drives my ego a little bit, like I'm getting fitter, which makes me more competitive, and I want to do as well as I can at the next race, whenever that is. So that sort of, I've got like it feeds that a little bit and ticks that box for me. But then in the afternoon it takes on a whole different meaning. Like if I have a big day at work, all of a sudden running has no like the run doesn't feed an ego, or it doesn't have anything to do with fitness. It's pure like psychological activity or benefit activity for me. So for me, I'm like, oh, I've got to go for a run. Like I don't care what it's doing physically to me. It's all about what this activity now is doing for me, allowing me to de-stress and process the whole day and come back to the house in a much more relaxed, calm state. So it's sort of been a good learning curve as to what running means.
And do you find that like be your personality after you've gone for a run, or if you know you can get out for a run this afternoon, is then the person like you are? Does that question make sense? Yeah.
100%. Yeah. Like today was a perfect example, right? Had a big day, like basically got into work about 10:30, left work about 6:30. Can't remember having any sort of break longer than 10 minutes during the whole day. And then got home, like I said something to Bree. She's like, oh, well, what happened at work? I'm like, no. Nope, not talking about that. I got to go for a run. 20-minute run I went for. Came back. I'm like, okay, let's talk. Like, I've got this now.
Yeah.
And I was thinking during the run, I'm like, I would never fucking run 20 minutes. This is offering me nothing. But nothing physically or physiologically, this is probably bad for me. But psychologically, this is everything for me right now.
Yeah. I had that, like Carly said to me one day last week, like, why do you have to go for your run for? It's not like you're training for anything. Can't you just like skip one today? And I'm like, yeah, no, you don't get it. Like, I need to go for a run to be the person you married. Like, this is my, this is my characteristics and stuff like that. Brad, how are you and going with it all? You're happy as Larry.
I'm enjoying getting out the door, like just because running feels effortless again, which it hasn't for so long. But we said last week that we're actually lucky that we're runners, because you see so many other people that, you know, going to the gym was their outlet and they can't do that anymore. And so that's why Mulligans is so busy now, because those people need to find another outlet. But for me, running, there's so much uncertainty in the world at the moment. And so for me, running is that normality or something that I can control. So that's why running is really important for me at the moment, is that, look, I can't control whether I'm getting called into work or whether I'm going to get sick, you know, like obviously do everything to avoid getting sick. But I know that I can go and run twice a day out at Mulligans until they close Mulligans due to Corona. So yeah, that's what I'm getting out of running at the moment.
Moose, I wanted to ask you as well, when it's down to one training partner, or you kind of said you're going solo now anyway, so you're not picking your favorite friend in Ballarat?
Well, yeah, I don't. One person should go running right now, I guess. Like the rule might be two people, but for me, I'm feeling one person should be out running. That's just me though. Like I'd rather cut it off now and just say I'm running solo. I wrap my head around that.
It's not going to kill you, is it? Like it's an easy thing to do to maybe make a big impact.
I'm happy to run with one other person though. If I, you know, I'm happy to go with just like I do most of my runs on my own. But if one person wants to run with me, I'm not going to say no.
Actually, someone mentioned something to me during the week that was quite funny, is that for however how many years you've only run by yourself, pandemic comes, starts training with a group. Explain that.
I haven't been training with a group, but there definitely has been more runs in the last 2 to 3 weeks where I've run with people. And yeah, I don't know why. but Sundays are always, you know, like I run with Trav and McGowan. I haven't run with those boys for nearly a month now. But yeah, I think I'm going to be doing a bit more with, so Dick Telford stopped all of his squad sessions now. So Josh Johnson said if I want a training partner that he's sort of keen to do, in a way, whatever sessions I want to do, which will be cool, and might even pace me to a 5K over the next month.
Got to get through that 15 by 1 minute on, 1 minute off next week first.
If you're serious, you could go through 5K in quicker than 15 minutes there.
No, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't waste a sub 15 minutes on the session. I'd have a crack.
All right, let's thank some Patreon supporters, eh? And then we might whiz through the back end of the show because we need to add someone to the Skype call. Go first, Bradley.
My shout out is to Craig Rangott. He's from Avoca Beach, which is northern beaches of Sydney. He's run 2:53 at Melbourne for his 44th birthday, 34 minutes for 10K, has two kids. He's run a 16:59 5K and an 82-minute Sydney Morning Herald half marathon, which is worth a few minutes on that course. And looks like he runs for Mingara Athletics Club. So that's sort of Mingara's sort of Central Coast.
Imagine,
so thanks for your support, Craig.
PB on your 44th birthday over the marathon. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't think I will be.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to thank Fredrik Bru from Oslo in Norway. Follows Moose on Strava, Brad, but not you or I. How's that, eh?
I'm okay with that.
That's understandable. Yeah, I'll put up some good content.
Whenever I search these guys, I'm like, oh, yeah, usually they're following like everyone, but not just Moose. He's ran 36:45 for 10K. He's got a half marathon PB of 1:19:11. And could be a DJ, I reckon. He's got a SoundCloud account. This guy's like profiles. Everything was locked down super tight, so hard to find much of on him at all. And maybe a fan of the Emperor Penguin. So, yeah, some interesting stats there for Fredrik all the way over in Norway. Hope you enjoy. There's some bonus content with one of our friends from Norway, Christian, talking all things Kenya. You said you listened to it before, Brad. You like that insight?
Yeah, I did. He's always entertaining, Christian.
So actually, you noticed he hasn't put anything on Strava the last couple of days. I must check in that everything's all right with Christian. That's unlike him, so I'll do that after the show.
He's always on the edge of overdoing it, Christian.
Yeah, yeah. Moose, who are you thinking?
I got a question for you before we move on from Fredrik. Is an emperor penguin bird, mammal? What is it?
You wouldn't. I actually don't know the answer to that, but you wouldn't believe it because this come up today, this emperor penguin stuff, and Carly's actually reading a book about emperor penguins at the moment, and we've been watching this documentary, like BBC one. Those things are insane down there in Antarctica.
Yeah. So you don't know the answer? Brad, you know the answer?
Wait, and what were the options again? I'll have a guess, though.
Bird or mammal or whatever you call it, like reptile.
Well, it lays eggs. You know it lays eggs, and then the girl penguin gives it to the guy penguin, and then the girl leaves and kind of says, I'm out of here. I'm going back to the ocean to get some food. And then the guy's got to stay there in the whole winter where it doesn't even get sunny, looking after this egg, just keeping it off the ground. And then it hatches, and then the mum comes back, and then she's been eating she's been eating fish and stuff, and she still can keep the fish in her stomach, and then she kind of just spits them back out and gives them to the little baby penguin.
So
I'm going to say male.
When is mammal. Reverse feminism going to hit that species?
What about Carly told me a story today that one of the girl penguins come back, and like something must have happened to her baby penguin, so she just flogged like another couple's baby penguin, just went and took it off them. I'm thinking,
I'll say they're
brutal.
A bird moose.
Nah, they're mammal.
Yeah, you've got enough time to Google right then.
They mammal. They lay eggs.
Birds lay eggs too, you dickhead.
Birds don't fly. These things don't fly.
Emu's a bird, isn't it? Is emu a bird? They don't fly.
Is it? Only bird. Yeah. It's still a mammal, though, isn't it? I don't know. What's the do you know the answer, Moose?
You're a fucking...
I don't know the answer. I'm actually so genuinely interested.
So I just told you 500 other facts about fucking emperor penguins, and now this has come up.
Isn't emu a bird that doesn't fly?
Let me fucking Google. I'm Googling right now.
You thank the next patron.
Oh, yeah.
I'll Google it.
Okay. But you... Yeah, all right. I'm going to thank another Norwegian fella, Morten Tokkel. He is from Bodø, very north Norway. That's like North Pole type area. Owns a pair of Ekiden Next Percenters. He's run 1:26 at Barcelona half marathon 2020. That was a fast race, if I remember. 3:05 at Berlin 2019. 42 minute PB. Shit. Got some good ink. Used to have a mad mustache. Looks like a mad snake. A mad snake, like real thin fella, Brady.
Nah, just like a mad fighter.
Oh, a mad fighter. Wouldn't want to throw him in a street fight. Now, this is, you can't write my words. I would never say that. I'd take anyone in a street fight.
This guy, wouldn't you take anyone probably in Ballarat, but not in Norway?
Yeah, I don't know. I reckon Norwegian's a bit soft.
Penguins are a fish.
No, they're a bird.
Well, I've got here. Penguins.
You're fucking not a fish, you idiot.
Penguins are a fish. Fish, mammals, or amphibians, because they live in water, on land, or both. Penguins are birds, even though they spend time on land and in water. Their motion in the water more closely resembles flying than the swimming motion used by other animals. Polar bears eat penguins.
In zoological terms, penguins are classified as birds. This comes from the worldatlas.com.
Yeah, but what kind of penguins? There's probably heaps of different species of penguins.
No, penguins are penguins. Penguin,
yeah.
Emperor penguin?
Quote of the show for me is, Brady, it can't be a bird, it doesn't fly. So I hope the guy that started up that Instagram account that does quotes of inside running does that one.
What about when Brady just said, literally, it's a fish?
I was just reading from Google. I literally Googled emperor penguin, mammal, or bird. Like a fish.
And you live in Australia, Brady, and surely you've heard songs about emus and not flying. It's a bird. Like
just like a brim.
Oh, I feel sorry for those kids in Echuca, Moama.
Just Echuca. I haven't got my New South Wales registration, Brad. Should do that. Their schools are still open. Running news, not much of it. So luckily we've talked shit for the first 45 minutes of this episode. World Athletics President Sebastian Coe says they are reviewing the Olympic qualifying procedures, but as of today, which would have been like last week sometimes, all athletes who have met the entry standards for their event will remain qualified for the Tokyo Olympics in 2021. I think, Brad, you and I predicted this last week that it was going to be postponed, and it has been moved to 2021. Mm. We were saying Australia and Canada and that aren't going last week, but now it's officially moved. So it's an interesting thing, the Olympic qualifiers stand. I think it's a good thing because people have done everything they had to for an Olympics they thought was going to happen in 2020. So that means, friends of the show, Ali, Sinead, guys like Stewie, Brett Robinson, Jack Rayner, Liam Adams, all their times and spots are still there, but it will still open the window for other people to get there, but they won't have to go and do it again unless they kind of have to, I suppose. Thoughts, boys?
I like it too. Here's a hypothetical for you I was thinking about.
Yeah, so hypotheticals. Go.
We know that the Olympics have been pushed back to 2021. Now, I'm guessing World Athletics would still love to have a World Championships in 2021. So, you know, most events, you could potentially have the Olympics and World Championships, you know, a month apart, go from one championship to another, hold peak form for a few weeks. But the marathon, you couldn't do that. You could only run either the Olympic marathon or the World Championship marathon. So does this potentially open up a World Championship spot to second tier athletes that don't make the Olympic team?
If they're both going to be in the same year, that's the hypothetical.
Yeah, yeah.
Aren't they meant to be in Oregon, Tracktown, USA?
Yeah, no, they got moved to 2022, didn't they?
Yeah, I think they just got pushed back a year, Brad.
I didn't know.
Yeah, they did.
I didn't see that memo.
Yeah,
so it'll be the same year as Com Games.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yes. Well, same question, Brad. Do you send your B team?
No, because they might be, depending on the time of, so Com Games might be earlier in the year, so there might be enough gap.
Yeah, that'll be March, April, and then World Champs would be like September, October, like you had Moose at Doha.
So you could do both,
yep.
Yeah, but it's a shame.
A lot of people are saying no to big paydays, though. Say they go Com Games, and then they'll want to go like a New York or a Berlin or a Chicago or wherever to make some actually money for the year. I don't know how many top tier people would go Comm Games and then World Champs. Where's the World Champs? Oh yeah, Oregon.
Aussies would though. Aussies would pick Comm Games and World Champs over paydays, I reckon. Most of them.
Not many of them wanted to run the marathon in Doha. Big Moose, our sole representative in the men's. Rochelle Rogers in the women's.
Yeah, but there was some circumstances around that.
Yeah.
Like I think Comm Games and a World Championships in Oregon is a bit different.
I agree with you. Oregon's definitely got some power there.
Anyway, yeah, sorry about
that. Hypothetical I thought about as well. We're talking about some people that would benefit from the Olympics getting put back a year, people coming back from injuries. Last week, Brad, also I saw this thread on Let's Run talking about some of the people who have tested positive and serving bans at the moment, and their bans were meant to be up to the 2020 Tokyo Olympics, but now they'll be right to return to competition for 2021. Those guys must be punching the sky. And then when I was looking at these standards, could you imagine if you were qualified for 2020 and then some drug cheat has come back from a ban and knocked you out of your qualifying spot to go to the Olympics in 2021? You'd be filthy.
Yeah. Well, this is what's wrong with the whole drug ban thing. It should be life, really.
Throw life at them. All right. Anything more there, Moose, before we go to a listener question?
No, it's good because it still allows people to qualify as well. Like, and it also keeps those in there that have already done the hard work.
Yeah.
So I think there probably should be some sort of fitness test introduced closer to the date for those that have qualified like 18 months before the event. But it's good that they're not just going to scrap that. But then they still give people a chance to better it as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, I like it's good. And it just makes, we're talking when we're running on this Sunday long run, especially the women's marathon, it just makes it, like, it was already so interesting, like kind of having five girls for three spots, and it's just going to even make it even more interesting now, because I can't see any of those five girls actually running slower. I think they can all go quicker. So they just got 12 months to get faster.
Yeah, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Personal bests are exciting, but only when they're earned. No one likes a course cutter, so why do we settle for GPS watches that can't provide an accurate measurement on the track? Introducing Coros Wearables' new Track Mode, a first-of-its-kind technology that provides an accurately calibrated measurement on your local 400-metre track, regardless of which lane you choose to run. Gone are the days of your watch splitting 50 to 100 metres early per kilometre. This innovative technology isn't the only thing to make Coros watches stand out. They also feature the absolute best battery life in the industry. With as high as 60 hours of true GPS battery life, you'll never have to worry about your watch giving up before you do. All of this backed by a 2-year limited warranty. Interested in learning more about the latest performance technologies in GPS watches? Follow Coros Australia at coros_au or check out www.coros.com.
Listen to question, Brad. Well, maybe go to the second one. The first one's a bit silly. We've already talked about street fights tonight.
All right, Jody McLeod has sent in, "Hi gents, thanks for the great running company. For the times we need to take our training indoors, what are your tips for doing treadmill workouts? Do you still have structured sessions that you follow? And if you do, what do they look like?"
Oh yeah, Jody, Inside Run Podcast, session of the week, 15 by a minute hard, minute easy. Do it on the treadmill, take a photo of the screen when you finish, send it through to me at Inside Run Podcast. That's what I reckon, heaps of good sessions you can do on a treadmill, mostly time-based I like.
Treadmill is a shit place to do a session though, because you've got to adjust the pace like with you, manually, and then it takes ages to get up to speed, and then say you've got to rest, you can't, like, it's hard to walk around and you can't really jog so much because you've got to change all your speed. I don't like it. I'd prefer to do all my treadmills. I don't know how I'd do that, actually. That's a good question.
Progressive runs are good on there.
Oh yeah, progressive runs, that is a good one.
You just keep winding it down.
Hill reps, because you don't have to jog back down the hill for, especially long hill reps, you don't have to jog back down the hill for however long.
Mm.
Get a good gradient and punch away.
Yeah, I reckon even just some, you know, you do 20 minutes easy to start off with, you crank it up for 20 minutes in the middle there, Jody, turn it down for 20 minutes, that's good bang for your buck. Hour workout, you're not going to get unfit doing stuff like that.
But Moose, you've done it before where you just keep the treadmill running. So you do, say you're doing 3-minute reps, you do the 3 minutes, you just jump off to the side keep the treadmill going, and then you hold on to the sides when you jump back on to get your, you know, balance, and away you go again.
Yeah. But what a lot of treadmills have is like a timeout feature, whereas if you're not on them, it stops the treadmill. So say you get off it for 45 seconds, it might have something built into it where it stops running and you have to keep somehow pressing buttons or something. It's just annoying, you know, it's just not fun. It's not bad doing easy runs on treadies, but I just don't like it.
Yeah, in these times though, might have to do it. Moose on the Loose, got something. Thanks for your question, Jody. Sent that through on Patreon, I think. Thanks for your support as well.
Moose on the Loose now. I'm pretty good, you know.
Maybe don't be dickheads. I was thinking that. Still a lot of runners being dickheads out there running in big groups.
Still fucking group runs getting organised on Sunday. Like, I don't know whether you guys saw them, but I saw them on Strava social media. Oh, yeah, we're going to go do another group run together. No. No, don't. Fuck's sake. Run by yourself. The end.
Moose on the Loose for another week. What's coming up? Bit coming up. The girls, guys, Joel Chone White, Ali Pashley, Nick Earl, Road to Nowhere. Moose, you hosting that on Wednesday?
Oh, yeah, I could do that. That'd be fun.
This is the fifth one.
Smack up that fucking Nick Earl again.
Road to London times two, Road to Nowhere times three.
He's a crowd favourite, Nick Earl. It's growing every week.
What about someone sent into the Instagram saying, you should rename the Nick Earl podcast Road to London like October or something? And then I'm like, it was never called the Nick Earl podcast. It's been called other stuff. It's not Nick's podcast. The other two are there as well. What about they bet on the weather? They had like a 15-minute conversation trying to get Nick to tell them what weather to bet on for the sports bet like app, because you can't bet on anything else at the moment. Dickheads. Anyway, that's coming out Wednesday. Friends of the show episodes as well. I've been loading these on Patreon. There's four there at the moment. Just some real laid-back chats. I know Moose and Brad, you've got some people planned as well, some kind of part twos, some people that you can just have a conversation with, and it just goes out to a way smaller amount of people. So the interviewee kind of relaxes a bit. We kind of relax a bit as well, and trying to do a bit more of that to keep people entertained when they're running more solo with their headphones on, and just trying to touch base with people that we talk about a bit on the show and just getting a bit of an update about what they're doing. So we've been having fun with that. There's plenty of content going there on Patreon as well. What's coming up in your life, Bradley?
Who knows? Maybe going to work Wednesday. It's a big Groundhog Day, really. It's sort of, we're all just restricted to being inside other than me going running or going down to the shops. But, you know, one positive is that we get to spend a heap more time together as a family. Like we're home yesterday together, home today together. So, but other than that, just, trying to get through another 140 to 150K a week, a couple of decent sessions. That's about me.
15 by one on, one off.
Possibly.
Moose, what's going up in your life?
Oh, you know. Same, we're going to appointments in the store. So if someone needs to come in the store, we make an appointment for them. It that's not like a regulation or anything, but we just felt it was getting a little awkward, I reckon. We were a bit uncomfortable having a store like operating to free flowing traffic. So we just made a decision to go to appointment based only, and doing a lot over the online store. So I'm getting into this IT stuff. I want to make it real clean and pretty. It's a real hard time in retail, because if you're trying to survive through it, you have to have goods to sell, but it's a real risk to start ordering product for your store when you don't know what's going to happen next week and you might be shut totally. So for instance, online stores in New Zealand, they basically can't operate because the couriers and the logistics companies are only open for essential services. So they can't, even though they're online, it's still not an operating business, or they can't take orders, they can't ship orders, they can't receive orders. So it's a really difficult time. You've kind of got to hedge your bets a little with how to run the business. It's a lot of thinking going on. A little bit of gambling to a degree.
Talking about business women, Brad, I'm interviewing a real big shoe dog down in Ballarat coming up for Friends of the Show on Patreon. The queen of running in Ballarat, eh? That's going to be a great interview.
Can't wait. The real boss.
I heard you're a bit intimidated, though.
Oh, yeah, cacking myself to do this one. Yeah.
And so you should be.
Very, very scared. But anyway.
I'm scared to go back out on the couch at the moment, let alone you, interviewer.
That's going to be fun. Patrons, keep an eye out for that. This week's interview, we don't have one. We've been doing some, as I said before, some raw stuff that's gone on Patreon. And instead, we're going to be talking to a friend of the show, Scott Nicholas. Going to add him into the conversation now. Moose, do you want to maybe tell us a bit about Scott, why this calls him your mate? He was on a couple of podcast episodes, but we had to delete him, remember?
Oh, we can get him back up now, surely.
Yeah,
we can. But yeah, so Scott, he...
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, sorry.
Distance running nerd, real into the history of running, ran for the University of Oregon, came over. He has a real thirst for knowledge about running.
Scott Nicholas, welcome to the Inside Running podcast again.
Oh, I just heard Moose talking me up. Thanks, boys.
Oh, you missed the first bit.
Okay, cool.
He gave you a good introduction. Can you hear us all good?
Yep. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, we can. Hey, thanks for coming on tonight, a bit later than we originally planned, but we wanted to bring you on because you were the brains behind this interesting concept that come across Moose's desk and then got forwarded on to Brad and I, and then you put a bit of a panel together kind of to let this thing grow a bit, and now we're kind of at an exciting time where we can share with the listeners exactly what's going on with this distance running all-time performance competition which you've put together. So do you want to give us a bit of a background and a bit of where the thinking came from originally?
Yeah, no problem. It's funny because, funny is probably the wrong word, but it's kind of ended up the perfect timing for this, really. So it's kind of ironic in some ways. But, what came about was I was back in the U.S. in December and January this year. And as Moose talked about on one of the previous episodes, we had this just epic week at Nike where we just, I don't know, you couldn't be more motivated about running and running footwear product after that kind of week. And I don't know, it was just kind of a buzz. And then all the boys went back and came back home here. And I was stuck over there for a couple of days before my family arrived. And I was just trolling around on letsrun.com one day. And they had something up about a distance running contest and kind of like an all-time contest. And I was like, oh, it'd be really cool if we did something like that down here, and we picked, I don't know how I kind of came up with it, but I just figured, what if we picked the top 64 performances of all time, and kind of made almost like a head-to-head matchups, and then created this bracket out of it, but then only each athlete only gets one entry. And kind of I was playing around with a few ideas in my head and kind of bounced it off of Moose, and he said, yeah, that sounds really cool. Why don't we talk about it when you get back? And I kind of worked on it a bit more. And then, just when I got back here, I'm in some ways, like, I'm the biggest distance running fan you'll probably find. And this covers all countries, history, whatever. I love it. It's what I grew up with. I'm passionate about it. You know, I was born here, but I only lived here until 1975, and I moved back here in 2004. So I'm not exactly probably as well versed as some other people around Australian distance running history. So I know a lot of the obvious stuff, but when you start getting into, like, you know, who should be on this list and who shouldn't be on this list, I wasn't exactly the right person for that. So I recruited a few other people that shall remain nameless, but people that I think if people did know who they were, they'd be really, you know, people would be pretty stoked with who was involved. And also had some kind of advisory advice when we got to the performances, people like Glenn Johnson and Trevor Vincent TV, people that know as much as anyone out there, especially around Australian distance running history. So that was kind of the concept behind it, and kind of getting the right people behind it. That's how it kind of came about.
Yeah, we're stoked that we have the opportunity to share it with our audience and kind of run through some of the head-to-head battles each week to you know, in a couple of weeks' time, figure out what the greatest Australian distance running performance was at all time. And it's probably important to note, because when I first looked at it, we're talking about performances here, not athletes, aren't we?
That's right. It's really performance driven. So kind of what we did was we created a criteria of how you actually made it onto this list. And do you guys want me to read off what those things were?
Yeah, that'd be good to know.
Yeah, so it's kind of in this order, to be honest. First one, if you have an Olympic gold medal, you are on the list, obviously. Number two, Olympic silver. Number three, world record holder. Number four, a major win. So like an example of that would be Moniz winning Berlin. Number five, Olympic bronze medal. Number six, Commonwealth Games gold medal. Number seven, an international level win. So Brett Robinson, sub 60 half marathon, perfect example of that. Number eight, a significant performance. So a perfect example of that would be, say, with Craig Mottram getting a silver medal, Commonwealth Games 2006, but, you know, running 12:58, getting, you know, that's a significant performance that doesn't necessarily meet the previous criteria. And number nine, an Australian record holder. So, look, it's really tough with some of the athletes. It was really, really, really tough. On whether they should be on the list or whether they should not be off on the list. But then also with some athletes, you know, you pick Deke as an example, world championship marathoner, won Boston in 2:07:51. But, you know, what's his greatest performance ever? You know, was it his Commonwealth Games win in 82 in Brisbane? I mean, there's just some athletes that you could literally pick, you know, two, three, five performances with. So that's when it got really tricky with some people.
And this is like dating over a huge range of years as well, isn't it? Like, do you know off the top of your head what the earliest performance was? And I guess Brett Robinson's would have been the latest?
Yeah, I would say that would be the latest. The first would have been Edwin Flack, 1896, in the first modern Olympics. He is on the list, and it was an interesting one. He was probably the hardest one to essentially rank because he was a double gold merit. He won two gold medals, 800 meters, 1500 meters in the first Olympics. But how does that really stack up in the grand scheme of things? You're like, there's no one on the list with two Olympic gold medals in the same Olympics. And, you know, does that count as one performance or two? In the contest, we kind of considered that two perform. We kind of considered it one performance because it was the same Olympic Games. But look, a really tough one to kind of slot against things, because if you just look at things on the surface, that's arguably the best performance of any. That's why, like, I think what's really good and interesting about this whole concept is it just creates banter. And the timing of doing it now, like, you know, we've got nothing really to talk about performance-wise. So, you know, talking about hypothetical stuff, really, it's kind of what it comes back to.
Yeah, we love that on this show as well. So so you get this panel together, you get these guys who give them a whole stack of information, you strip it down to 64 performances, and then you ranked the top 16. Is that right? Because when you drew them out, you didn't want the top 16 to go head-to-head so they couldn't progress?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So you wouldn't want, say, Herb Elliott going against Benita Willis in the first round because, you know, the reality is they're going to be two athletes that you think are probably going to make it into the top 16. Pretty safely. But, you know, you want to create some matchups in there that, you know, evolve kind of in the later rounds. Kind of like if you were going to the Australian Open and you were creating that tournament, you're not going to put Rafa against Federer. You know, people want to see that as a finals kind of matchup. And that's kind of how you want to look at this. It's almost like an Australian Open. It's like a tennis tournament. You know, you have seeded athletes in there. But then, you know, there's some really good first. I thought the most interesting rounds were the first two rounds that we did, because there's just some matchups that there was some really, really good debate about. And you're, you know, I'm still sitting here going, oh, you know, I might not agree with that, but, you know, the consensus was, you know, that it was X performance over Y.
Yeah, for sure. And Brad, have you got something to add? Because you've been studying this. You've probably got your head around this the most from the podcast point of view.
Yeah, so Scott, nice to finally chat to you and meet you. But what we thought, because we've got 32 first round matches, that's obviously too many to get through one episode. So what we thought we'd do is do 8 per week, basically let you know who's head-to-head in those 8 matches, give some stats about what they've done, and then the following week we'll give the results for that 8 and then preview the next 8. So the first round will take 4 weeks to get through, and then we'll progress into the second round and so on.
And yeah, definitely. And let listeners, we'll kind of put some, you know, some polls on our social media and like Facebook and Instagram, and let them have a comment as well before, like they'll have a week to kind of give us their two bobs worth before we tell them who the winner is the following week.
Yeah, I think that's great. Look, like I said, there's some ones that people will see in round one and they're like, oh, well, yeah, clearly that person's going to beat that person. But to be honest, I mean, building this list, there was kind of like 20 really, really dead set obvious people on the list. You're like, yep, they're on the list, you know, and then you're kind of like, well, yeah, this performance from this athlete, easy. It got really, really, really hard for about the final 20 performances. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's going to be stuff not on the list that, you know, hopefully you don't get any phone calls and emails about, hence remaining nameless on the panel. There's some stuff that maybe could be on there. You know, we were like, do we put Cliff Young on there? You know, he didn't end up making the 64, but you're like, man, when you start to strip it back and look at some things, you're like, man, that was pretty epic.
Scott, did you find it hard to compare athletes over generations? Like knowing how distance running has evolved and the strength of East Africa now, or just the amount of top runners there compared to what there were in the past, did that ever come into it, or did you find it difficult to compare?
Depends on the situation and the matchup. I think it's certainly, we definitely as kind of the panel rewarded probably wins and competition over times. So when you kind of go back to that ranking criteria and look at the context, and this is where like someone like Len was amazing, because Len could give us the context of basically every performance on that list, which was just staggering, the wealth of knowledge that, you know, like he and someone like TV have. To be honest, it made the whole thing. It was like, it's great to come up with the concept, but unless you have someone that understands these performances, it actually means nothing.
And the listeners will actually see that, because we have literally a paragraph on every single athlete which has come from these guys. So it's phenomenal, the work that they've put in. So yeah, we should say thanks to them. Yeah,
absolutely. They really brought it to life in my book. And that's where, so going back to your question, and when you get to certain matchups, you might see, I don't have the matchups in front of me, but you'll see like someone that's got a significantly slower time, that it didn't matter, because we were like, the context of that era and their performance, you know, relative to someone that might be super fast in today.
Yeah.
You know, you go, well, yeah, I mean, of course, so, like her belly had only ran a certain time for 1500 meters or 1 mile, but you go, but the guy never lost, and he won the Olympics by the largest margin ever, you know, so that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Awesome, Scott. Well, I reckon you've given us enough information here that we can now roll through the first 8 Bradley head-to-head battles that we can introduce to the audience, to the listeners, and then tell them who gets up out of these head-to-heads next week. Do you want to kick us? Are you doing the orange ones, Brad? Are you doing the first one? You want to kick us off?
Yeah, we'll just roll through them. So the first matchup is Herb Elliott versus Brett Robinson. So just a few stats. So Herb Elliott's greatest performance was a gold medal and world record in the 1500 meters at the Rome Olympics in 1960. Bit of information, broke his own world record, smashed a good, if not outstanding field. Enough said. Silver medalist Jazzy broke the mile world record in 1965. And an interesting side note or trivia question, how many times did Herb break the Australian 1500 metre record? Boys know?
I know because I'm reading it in front of me, which I did find it was pretty interesting when I did read this today for the first time.
Well, tell us the answer then, Brady.
He actually broke the Australian record zero times because back then you had to run the Australian record on Australian soil.
That is tough.
It made me wonder how many Australian records would actually be Australian records now.
Stewie's would.
Stewie's 10,000
metres. Stewie's 10K.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's Herb. So Brett Robinson, his greatest performance has been stated as his half marathon in 59:57, where he broke the Australian record in Marigami earlier this year. Bit more information, the first national record of the Tokyo Olympic year, and what a cracker it was. Robinson has been one of our most versatile distance athletes ever, with a range from 1500 metres up to the marathon and good performances across country and now on the road. Mona and Darren Wilson got close to sub 60 in the 1990s. Mona took a world championship silver medal in the half marathon and led Australia to a team silver in 1993. But Brett Robinson took us below 60 minutes and did so in winning a major international race. So that's the first head-to-head, Herb Elliott versus Brett Robinson.
That's a tough draw for Brett, let's be honest.
Yeah,
I'll do the next head-to-head.
It's sorry, boys, can I just jump in on one thing? So the way that every name was essentially, once we had that seeded 16 kind of in place, every name was literally drawn out of a hat by my daughter. And we said, okay, cool, we need the first name that's going up against Herb Elliott, Brett Robinson. That's how it happened.
Okay, so then the next head-to-head is Trevor Vincent, who we had on episode 20. He was the interview there. It was his gold medal performance in the 3,000-metre steeple at the Commonwealth Games in Perth 1962. So this was at the first day of the Games, and the competition was hot. The temperature was peaking at 40 degrees Celsius in the midst of a Perth heatwave. Trevor Vincent didn't worry over much about the conditions, though, and turning the heat up on his rivals. He was headed by the favoured Englishman Maurice Herriot in a grueling battle over the final two laps. Vincent gained a decisive edge to win by 10 metres in 8:43.4. The steeple was the first final in the day's program, and temperatures cooled a little. Later in the afternoon, when the 6 miles was run, the temperature was still warm, but had dropped to 30 degrees. And his going up against Yusuf Abdi's sixth place finish at the 2008 Beijing Olympic Games, where he ran a time of 8:16.36. And Yusuf was on the podcast episode 112 and 113. So Yusuf Abdi brought a 1500 metres runner's speed to the steeple, but he didn't always get everything right in the event. When he did, Abdi was a formidable proposition, and he was formidable in Beijing. He ran a personal best of 8:17.97 to qualify for the final, and another one, 8:16.36, this time to finish sixth. It was the best finish by an Australian since Kerry O'Brien finished fourth in 1968. About the only thing that went wrong was that Abdi fell just 0.14 short of Sean Crichton's national record. Abdi has 6 of the 7 sub-820s by an Australian, but not the record. So that's a very solid head-to-head, and it's funny that they're both steeplechasers.
Yeah, again, like that just happened by chance, and there's a few others later that you'll just go, how did that happen by chance? But I promise you it did.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a good matchup by any standard. Again, I mean, perfect example of, you know, what's more significant, you know, a championship winning performance or a super fast time in an Olympic final. I mean, tough one to call there.
Yeah, that one would be a tough debate, especially running two PBs and coming that close to the Aussie record in an Olympic final is pretty amazing.
Yep, absolutely.
Moose, do you want to do the next one?
Yeah, so the next one is Al Lawrence. He was a bronze medal 10,000-metre runner at the Olympic Games in Melbourne 1956. Al Lawrence produced the race of his life to take a bronze medal behind the great Vladimir Kutz in the 10,000 on that opening day of competition at the Melbourne Olympics. Loro didn't go with the torrid pace set by Kutz and Britain's Gordon Pirie, but he was always prominent in the pack. He was a typical 1956 Aussie Olympian driving down from his home in Sydney to Melbourne with a teammate, John Russell, stopping off at Pakapanyu Army Base just outside Seymour for a warm-up race. He roomed opposite John Landy in the Olympic Village. So a bronze medal in the Olympic Games.
Sounds like your mates with him, Moose, when you call him Loro.
Yeah, well, someone's mates with him. He's going up against Graham Crouch, Ballarat, actually. This is very fitting. Graham Crouch was a Ballarat runner. He was fifth place, seventh fastest ever in the 1500 metres Com Games, Christchurch, 1974. In that race, ran 3:34.22. In normal circumstances, Graham Crouch would be nominated for his eighth place in the 76 Olympic final. After all, it's a rare feat and was another 40 years before another Aussie made the final. But there was nothing normal about the 74 Com Games final, which many rank as the greatest 1500/mile race ever. Philbert Bailly went to the front, blasted through 800 in 1:52, and repelled John Walker's challenge to win in a world record 3:32.20. Walker was also under the previous world record. Ben Chipko, Rod Dixon, and Crouch became the fourth, fifth, and seventh fastest ever. What a race.
I mean, the depth of that 1500, if you want to see something fascinating, like go look at the results of that race. I think there's something like six eventual Olympic medalists in that race. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's probably the best 1500 field ever, period.
Jeez, I'm learning some stuff here, boys.
Yeah, it's a real celebration of Australian distance running, though, because so many of our listeners won't have heard of a lot of these names, even though they've done phenomenal things in the sport and for the sport.
And the information around these performances is so good to know as well. Like, just, yeah, that stuff you just added there, Scott, and what Moose read out, like, it's, yeah, it makes a world of difference to understand some of these awesome performances.
That's one of the things we talked about, and, you know, the history element of this and it being a real education piece, because, like, the distance running heritage in Australia is second to none. And some of it's really obvious, but there's some stuff that, you know, you just wouldn't necessarily unearth unless you did some serious research and were super passionate about it. So just to be able to share that stuff, I think, is the coolest thing about the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. All right. The next matchup is on show court two, Kate Anderson versus Katrina Bissett. So Kate Anderson won the gold medal for the 5,000 metres at Commonwealth Games in Kuala Lumpur in 1998. Funnily enough, the 1998 Games saw the 5,000 metres replace the 3,000 metres. It used to be on the Commonwealth Games roster. It was hot and steamy and provided a firm test of any distance runner's credentials. Anderson had run 15:10 the previous year in Oslo, but no one was going to run that in Kuala Lumpur. A solid tactical race and good close took her to the first Commonwealth Games 5,000 metre gold ahead of England's Andrea Whitcomb in 15:52.74. Katrina Bissett, who was on episode 90, she broke the Australian 800 metre record in London in 2019, where she ran 1:58.78. So a bit more information about that record. So by July 2019, Charlene Randina's 800 metre national record had lasted just over 43 years. With a sub-2 in Australia and a gold medal at the World University Games, Katrina Bissett seemed on a trajectory to break it. Australian fans had seen that movie before, though notably when it stuck on Groundhog Day loop for Tamsin Manu, who ran so many 1:59-somethings without getting past it. The field for the London Diamond League fell into place, though, with Bissett having a winning chance rather than a hang and hope. She finished second, but her 1:58.78 finally put Randina's 1:59.0 to bed. So that's the next matchup.
And then the next one I'm going to read out is Derek Clayton, big dog in the marathon world. And it's his performance when he ran the world record of 208.34 for the marathon at Antwerp in 1969. And here's some details about his performance. However people try to redefine his performances, Derek Clayton changed the marathon. In one race at Fukuoka in 1967, he smashed through the 212, the 211, and the 210 barriers all in one go, winning the race in 209.36. But it was another marathon 18 months later in Antwerp what really changed the event. In the Belgium National Championship Marathon, on a course only used once and then never again, Clayton blasted away to a world record of 208.34. Not until 1981 would anyone run faster. The time seemed space age back then at the time. No longer would mere endurance suffice. Clayton had turned the marathon into an event for the runners and the racers. Pretty special performance, that one. That's right, yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah, and that's going up against Kerry O'Brien, who was the fourth place in the steeple again, 3,000-meter steeple at the Olympic Games at Mexico City in 1968. Kerry O'Brien is another on the list with so many great performances from which to pick. Most notably, his world record in 1970, but his run for fourth place in Mexico City's 2,000-plus-meter altitude at the 1968 Olympics definitely stands out. The final came down to a battle between two altitude-born Kenyans, Amos Biwott and Benjamin Kogo, George Young of the USA, and O'Brien. Biwott and Kogo prevailed, with Young just edging O'Brien for the bronze medal. That's solid. I'm glad I learned that stuff as well, because I didn't know that performance from Kerry. Moose, you up?
Yeah, so next battle, Eloise Wellings. She's been on episode 86, 87. She ran 14.54, 5,000 metres, Zurich, 2006. For an athlete held together by bits of string, Eloise... Hey, I didn't write this.
I didn't write it either.
I think the listeners can tell that we're reading this because we don't have as good a language. Yeah.
You're mates with Lauro, but you may not be mates with Eloise after this.
For an athlete held together by bits of string, Eloise Wellings has done extraordinarily well. If this exercise was being judged on persistence only, it would be Wellings first, daylight second. It's been a long career. Injuries do extend things, but arguably 2006 was Welling's finest year. It began with a fourth place in the Com Games 5,000 metres, just missing 15 minutes, continued with a team medal in the short race at World Cross, and then was capped with this run in Zurich, the second fastest ever by an Australian, behind only Benita Willis's national record. Okay, so Eloise goes up against Tony Manning. He won a gold medal in the 3,000-metre steeple at the Com Games in Edinburgh, 1970. So the 1970 Com Games steeple final was sprinkled with the world's very best. Kerry O'Brien had just set the world record in Berlin. Of Kenya's trio, Amos Biwott was the reigning Olympic champion. His teammate Benjamin Kogo, the silver medalist, and Ben Chipko, a rising star. Tony Manning was well regarded, but not as a possible winner. Yet he did a Lloydy, being in position to profit from O'Brien's spill at the final water jump. It was not fluke. Manning's 8.26.2 was a 9-second PB, putting him over 3 seconds ahead of Chipko at the line and 4 seconds clear of Biwott.
That's a pretty significant win right there.
Mm. A lot of steeplechase in this first part of the draw.
So my next one, is it Noel, is it Clough? How do you pronounce his last name, Scott? Do you know?
Oh man, you're putting me on the spot.
Neil Clough. What do you reckon, Moose?
I'd go Clough.
Neil Clough? Yeah. Anyway, sorry, Noel, not Neil. Noel Clough.
That's the easy bit. Noel.
I was focusing so much on the last name, butchered the first. Anyway, Noel won the gold medal in the 800 metres at the Kingston Commonwealth Games in 1966. He was far from the favourite in the eight-man final, three of the first four from the Tokyo Olympics, so Jamaica's George Kerr and minor medalists Bill Crothers and Wilson Kiprugut were in the field. Noel wasn't even the most fancied Australian. That would be soon to be Olympic champion Ralph DeBell. But after the main contenders went through 400 in sub 51, Noel's was last in 51.4. Who should sweep past them all in the final straight? But Noel, having run a PB 147.9 to make the final, he now won an unlikely gold with a time of full second quicker. So he must have got 146.9 or so. So Noel is going up against Stewie McSwain, who was a guest.
Stewie
on
could
episode,
be in trouble, yeah.
Yeah, episode 45. So Stewie probably hasn't had his greatest performance yet, but the best performance that we've got here is obviously his Australian record in the 10K, where he ran 27.23.8 in Melbourne at Zatopek last year. Stewie capped his best year yet when he broke the Australian record in winning the Zatopek 10,000 metres after making the final of the 5,000 metres at the World Championships in Doha and running personal best at 1,500 metres and 2 miles. Stewie capped his year by completing a hat-trick of Zatopek wins in a national record. It was the first time a national record had been set in the annual race since Sean Crichton and Darren Wilson broke Ron Clark's long-standing national record in 1996. So that's the seventh matchup, I think, for this week.
And the final one for this week is Edwin Flack. He spoke about four Scott gold medals in the 800 and the 1500 at the Olympic Games at Athens in 1896. Flack's journey to the first modern Olympics have huge historic significance. Australia is one of the two countries to have competed at every Olympics, and he beat everyone that was there. But the first editions of the Games did not necessarily boast all the world's best. But where would we be without him? That's a good rhetorical question there. And Edwin is going up against Jackie Perkins, who was fifth place at the World Cross Country Championships at Stavanger in 1989. Around Stavanger Golf Club, on a course described as miles and miles of never-ending mud and water, Jackie Perkins hung tough in the world's toughest race. Annette Sergey of France won her second title in 3 years, with Perkins out-sprinting Lynn Jennings of the USA, who would win the next three championships, as just 7 seconds covered eight women, finishing from 4th to 11th. Tight finish. For one glorious hour or so, this was the highest placing any Australian had attained at the world cross-country level. Then Mona went out and finished 4th in the men's race that same day.
Old Mona, hey? Old having to Mona. One-upper.
Really stitched up Jackie that day, didn't he?
Well, you know, top 10 at World Cross is, there's only been three men that have ever done it, and I think it's three women that have done it as well. So it's a really significant thing, and especially back in that era, the 80s and the 90s, World Cross Country was the thing.
Yeah.
So like back when they had one race and everyone ran it, that thing was a monster. That was the hardest race.
Well, especially because countries can send like six runners, whereas, you know, every other major championship, it's generally three. So it certainly makes it harder when you're competing against all the Africans as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome, Scott. So that's like pretty much half of the field we kind of just went through tonight, and then we'll go through the other half.
That's a quarter.
Jeez, all right.
First round, biggie.
Yeah, that's right, because we're going out 64, aren't we? So 32 head-to-heads.
Haven't had my Doha run come up yet. So.
I was going to say you were one of the protected 16, but you just missed that bit.
Pity the man who comes up against me.
Yeah.
Awesome, Scott. So we are going to release the top 64, aren't we? But we're just not going to tell anyone who progresses yet.
Yeah, that's it. We're not going to tell anyone the seeds, and we won't tell anyone the matchup or the winners, but we'll releasing the matchups, I think, is a good idea.
Yeah. Gets people talking.
Get a bit of banter going, a bit of debate.
Abusive emails coming through if you're not in the top 64.
Next week we'll...
It's going to happen too.
So next week we'll release the results of these first eight, and then we'll preview the next eight.
Yeah. And listeners, social media, we'll be asking you guys, what do you reckon about those 8 head-to-heads so far. Who's your pick? Awesome, Scott. Thanks for your time, mate. And
thanks,
yeah,
boys. Thanks
we'll keep
for
touching,
me on.
Touching base. How many weeks is this going to go for, Brad?
I reckon it'll be 8 or 9 weeks. Like, because it's going to take 4 weeks to get through round one.
Yeah.
So, but there's no running news on. So, as Scott said before, it's a perfect time to do this.
Might have to start proofreading some of that stuff before we've got to read it, though, I reckon. Oh. I was a bit dodgy on some of those names and words, but anyway, we'll be right.
We're all learning a lot.
All right, boys, our show's over. Thanks, Scott, for joining us at the end there, and I'll see you all next week.
See you, guys.
See you, guys.
Do you ever feel like your favourite running gear brand never listens to your needs? Koros Wearables prides itself on taking direct user feedback and turning it into constantly evolving, innovative software solutions. Your Koros watch will only get better with time. Doesn't matter if you're white or black. Just show love to everyone you meet. Doesn't matter if it don't come back.